Welcome to the Misfit Stars podcast, tour edition. I'm Shannon Curtis.
And I'm Jamie Hill. Hi, everyone. Hi, Shannon.
Hello.
Wow.
Hey, guess what happened just about 15 minutes ago?
Well, I know.
As we were driving in this car right now about to record our podcast for this week.
Yeah, guess what, listeners?
Guess what happened?
We crossed the Columbia River.
Which means
that
we crossed back into the state of Washington for the first time in months.
Where we live.
On our tour. Yay.
Guess whose bed we're going to sleep in tonight?
Our own bed.
Oh, my gosh.
Guess whose bed we're going to sleep in is a weird question.
Hey, man, when you're on tour, when you're us, it's a real easy, busy
so
lifestyle.
True.
Whose bed are you in each night? Hard to know.
That sounds so risque, but
I know.
It's just
sounds
not
very 70s.
Yeah, I know.
It's not like that, people.
It's very exciting to be just so very close to our own house.
Mm-hmm.
We're still in tour edition, though, because... Because
tour's not over.
Tour's not over. Even though we're staying the night tonight in our own bed, in our own house... We still have a handful of more shows to do this week and through next weekend.
Yep.
And then sort of a couple of outliers in a week or so after that.
Yeah.
But we are so excited to be back in the state of Washington.
Yay. It's wonderful. We love it here. We haven't seen it in 2.5 months.
I know. And it's beautiful. And it feels like home, which is pretty awesome.
Because it is home. So that's fortunate.
It is good. Yes. Hey, so do you want to welcome our new listeners?
Oh, yeah. You know what? Thank you for that open door, Shannon. I would love to walk through it.
Yes.
And inside this welcoming room, welcome all of you new listeners. Hi. If you are one of the people who has picked up one of our glossy Misfit Stars postcards this week on our pop-up store table, thank you for that. And thanks for tuning in. Super cool. And to our new supporting members, oh my gosh, thanks you all.
Thank you, new supporting members.
Yeah, we are very grateful for you. And in case you're listening to this and you're like, what's a supporting member? Here's the deal. This podcast is largely free to listen to. You just go to Apple Podcasts, you go to Stitcher, you go to our website, whatever, and you listen to it. And we want that. But if you want to use it as an excuse to support what we're doing and also literally to support the podcast, this is a listener-supported podcast. So if you want to self-select into that rarefied group of special people...
Very special.
...cast your lot in with ours...
We call them our stars.
We do. You're our stars. Is that a little corny? Hell yes, it is.
Oh, yeah.
Is it very sincere and earnest? Hell yes, it is.
That too.
Is this the place for that? Hell yes,
definitely,
it is.
Definitely, always.
Yep,
100%.
Totally. As you probably have picked up on, I'm usually the more sarcastic one. Shannon's usually the more earnest one, but I let her earnest gravitational force pull me toward her side on this kind of stuff because it's important. I've learned from Shannon that there are times when earnestness is not just okay, but actually the appropriate course of action. And I feel like with our supporting members, this is one of those times because we take it seriously that you take us seriously.
Yes.
And you know what? We do earnest as hell stuff sometimes in this podcast and in the private Facebook group that, oh, by the way, you get access to if you become a supporting member.
Yeah.
I mean, not if, when, right?
That's right.
A good word, Shannon. Good word choice.
So we would love it if you want to become part of our stars.
Yeah.
The way that you do that is it's very easy. You go to misfitstars.com/join.
Yep.
And you just follow the instructions you find there. You pick the level of support that works best for you.
5, 10, or 20 a month, people.
And
that's it.
Like if there's a sticker pack you want to get, sticker sheet, you can get that.
Mm-hmm.
T-shirt level, you can choose that. But the basic level is $5 a month. And you will get all of our exclusive members-only content from time to time. There's members-only stuff.
I hate the word content.
I do too, but there's nothing else to sub it with. So I went with it.
No, it's okay. I understand.
So
we'll allow
it. Also will be invited to join our private Facebook group online. And you can get to know some other stars in there, which is pretty great.
We have just the most supportive conversations in there.
It's really
great.
People
seem to want to use that area as a force for good, and I'm here for that.
I am so here for that too.
And Shannon, by the way, is wearing her Misfit Stars t-shirt today.
I am.
Because we're the ones who make these t-shirts, we made each of ourselves one.
It's a great shirt.
They're good shirts. And you know what? Now that you've worn it for like 10 months or so and laundered it repeatedly, like it really holds up well.
Oh, it's a great shirt.
It ages well. It's a good shirt.
It really does.
So I'll just throw that out there,
yes.
People. You want to get yourself a t-shirt? It's a level. You can do that.
So thank you, those of you who decide to join us as members. And later in this episode, we're going to talk about just the absolutely incredible day we had yesterday.
Yeah.
In Salem, Oregon, where we got to do a concert for a center for unhoused youth.
Yeah.
The center serves mainly a youth population ages 18 to 25.
Yep.
We're gonna talk all about this in the second half of the episode. It was, I mean, this sounds kind of over the top in what I'm about to say here, But it, in a lot of ways, my experience there yesterday kind of felt like a kind of a life-changing day in some ways. Like, it really shifted my perspective in some really deep and profound ways. And so
it was an eye-opener.
We're going to talk about that in the second half of today's episode. So stay tuned for that. But other than that, where did tour take us this week, Jamie?
Well, the first thing we did since we last spoke with our listeners is we celebrated your mom's birthday.
We did celebrate. We were in Northern California on my mom's birthday.
We had a lovely dinner with her and her boyfriend
and some friends of hers.
It was great. It was wonderful. It was a really, really nice evening.
It was really nice.
And then we drove just an absolutely beautiful drive day from Northern California up to the Boise area. And we had a show in Eagle, Idaho.
We sure did.
Which is, it's not exactly a suburb because it was one of the first things founded out there.
Right, that's right.
It's an older neighborhood for the area. I mean, it's from like, it was incorporated, it's been around forever, but I think it was incorporated as a town like in the 70s. Yeah. It's got like a 70s Western town vibe. It's cute as hell.
Up kind of in the hills. Yeah. And we've been going there for a number of years now to do a house concert with our friends, Nicole and Mike. And so Nicole and Mike, we were indoors this year because we were, you know, like getting close to fall and the weather had definitely turned.
Yeah.
And so we were inside today. Or today at that show. But
you don't realize this when you're like in California, but the rest of the world switches over to fall.
Yeah.
You're still just kind of in like late summertime, and then you drive anywhere else and it's like, oh, it's chilly and I can wear socks.
But Nicole and Mike, their house holds the distinction of us performing maybe one of our hottest concerts ever. The first time we ever did a show at their house, it was 112 degrees outside.
Yeah.
And I was sitting in the sun, and it's a miracle I didn't die.
Yeah. It's a miracle we all didn't die just like listening to her.
I know. It was really, really hot. But yes, we've been doing shows with our friends there for a number of years now. And it's one of those situations where I just feel so, so grateful with year after year getting to know these people better and in a deeper way.
It's just wonderful.
Feeling closer and closer to them as they continue to invite us into their lives and into their community. It's just a really remarkable and privileged thing to be.
It's wonderful. You know, they're just, they're a neat couple. They've got two wonderful kids. It's just a really cool situation. Getting to know both of them has been just such a joy. Nicole is sort of more forward in that way, and Mike plays his cards a little at first closer to the vest, you know?
Yeah.
And sort of, you know, unpeeling his layers and sort of getting in. Like, he's got this warm, tender heart in there, you know?
Oh, for sure.
And it's just been such a privilege to get to know that side of him. He said the most touching thing to me. I always take the hosts right before guests show up just to a private place. Just kind of prep them on what the show's going to look like that year.
Yeah.
Refresh them on what their day of show host duties are. And in that little private time, Mike said, I just said, you know, thank you so much for continuing to invite us back. It's really special. And Mike was the one who said, you know, I don't think it would feel like summer if you guys weren't here.
No.
Which, oh my gosh, you know what I mean?
That's so sweet.
It's just such a profound thing to me. We met these people in someone else's backyard because we travel around doing music, and now, like, these are dear people in our lives, and I feel that way about them, too. Like, if we didn't see them in a certain summer, I would be disappointed.
Totally.
It's just really nifty.
It's freaking magical.
I love being able to grow with people in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And getting to know their families. Their daughter is remarkable.
Yeah, well, like, I'm sure kids are great, but their daughter is older, and we've just gotten to know her little personality over the last number of years. She's so wonderful.
I'm sure that the son will get to know in that way too. Yeah. But he's just like still a little boy.
Yeah, for sure, like toddler age, sort of. And so, yes, this year their daughter their hung around quite a lot. She was there for sound check.
Yes,
she's been sort of like, they have a piano in their basement, which she's been playing. She's never had lessons, but we could hear her playing from downstairs in the basement, like playing left hand and right hand at the same time, you know, versions of Mary Had a Little Lamb and
a couple of more complicated
a Sound of Music
things.
Song. What was it? Doe a Deer.
Yeah. And also taking it to the ball game.
Yeah. And so she's not had lessons, but she's figuring out the piano and clearly has an intuitive sense of, you know, what the piano's all about.
And also, Doe a Deer and Take Me Out to the Ball Game are not simple songs, harmonically speaking. Like, to intuit those melodies, you have to have an intuitive understanding of the idea that there are internal modulations. Like, she doesn't have language for that, but those aren't necessarily simple melodies to pick out.
Right.
It's not like they're all just on the white keys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she has the rhythm, and she... She has all of this figured out. She's 8, by the way.
Yeah.
She's not like an old, like, 15-year-old. Like, she's a young human being, and she has been figuring this out for herself.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
She's been teaching herself, apparently, notation. But, like, she doesn't know what notation...
Inventing her own notation.
Yes.
Yes. In order to, yeah, I know.
She's figuring out a system for writing down how to play things on the piano. Most people who learn music have this, and it's notes, and you know it. She's figured out her own system.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
We had her... She asked if she could play my piano, and so after sound check, we had her up on the bench, and she was just playing notes. She wasn't playing a song of any kind. She was just kind of... playing a melody with her right hand and some other notes, complimentary notes with her left hand.
Yeah.
And it was musical. And it was, you know, it was pretty neat to share that moment with her. And I was telling Nicole after the show, a ways after the show, like, you know, I just telling her, like, she's got, you know, she's got some intuition around piano. She's a smart girl. And Nicole shared with me some stuff that was really, just really cool. She was saying that it's really important for her. She recognizes that she has an old soul that she's raising. And also she was sharing with me what a big value it is of hers as a mom to give her daughter experiences where she sees strong women doing work that's meaningful. To give her daughter the notion, to instill in her daughter the idea that women are strong and can do whatever they want to do in the world.
Yeah.
And she shared with me some other experiences that she's given her daughter, just giving her exposure to different women doing you know, bold stuff in the world with their lives. And I was just like, oh, man, like, this is how cool. Like, but one of the most important jobs on the planet is the job that our friend Nicole is doing as mom of this little girl, raising a daughter that, you know, will be able to see what's possible for herself as a citizen of this world and go out there and you know, she's going to save us all.
To approach parenting a daughter as a mom with that sort of intentionality is so powerful to me. You know, not just the idea that you can do anything, but that specifically as a woman, you can do anything. And I am going to show you examples of women doing stuff in the world in strong and powerful ways. And what an honor, by the way, for her to include you in that. How cool is that?
I felt extraordinarily honored to be included in that group of people.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, for sure. There was an interesting parallel for me that night between that conversation and one other conversation I had with a guest at the show, woman who I think she's probably in her 60s, I would guess. Mm-hmm. If I had to take a guess at her age.
That sounds right.
It was her first time seeing one of our shows, and talked with her for a good long while after the show.
Yeah.
And she was sharing with me a little bit about a career transition that she's in right now. She told me she was retired, and then I probed a little bit more about that, and it turns out that her last job ended just like a month or so ago, and so she's technically retired but looking for the next thing and kind of unsure what that's going to be. And then she sort of like shared with me how she's thinking that maybe for the first time in her life or her career as a working woman, she's worked her whole life, that maybe for the first time she's able to look for something to spend her time doing that is meaningful and feels like is something of purpose for her, but that she has spent a lot of her life and her career, her working career, doing jobs that she quote unquote thought she was supposed to do.
Yeah.
Rather than sort of being purpose driven or passion driven.
Sure.
You know? And in our conversation, she also shared with me about how she has a stepdaughter who's in her, I think, mid 20s. And she was sharing with me how much she admired her stepdaughter for being a young woman who does seem to be making decisions about her career and her life based on
like ideals,
strength and passion and purpose, you know, choosing to spend her life, you know, doing things because with those values in mind. And she said something at some point that was sort of like this wistful comment, like, I wish as a younger woman, I would have been able to, or known that was an option for me to choose to do things the way that she's doing them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think this is a direct correlation to what we're seeing with our friend Nicole raising her daughter, you know, like the fact that this stepdaughter is is aware of the fact that these are choices available to her is directly attributable to the generation of this 60-something-year-old woman that I was talking to, who has made it possible for those coming behind them to know that the options are there and to, you know, put cracks in those glass ceilings. Yeah. That women, that you, so like, it's just, it, her experience matters. Her experience, even though she may be just now figuring out that she can make some of those choices, you know, based on her own passion and purpose.
Yeah.
The work that she has done, paving the way for the rest of us, matters and has and counts toward our world becoming one in which women are empowered to do more than generations previous to ours have been able to do.
Yeah, I think you know? That's exactly right.
You know, so that was just a neat sort of like tie in for that night. I just felt like I left there feeling like just proud to be a woman.
Girl power. Absolutely.
You know, and just feeling really great about the women in my life, the women that we've encountered all summer, who are out there doing new things, trying new stuff, living in their truth, living in their strength, and
yeah.
changing their worlds, you know.
And the worlds of the people around them as a result.
Yeah. So go girls.
Yeah.
Go girls. I mean women, not girls.
Yeah,
also
but it's,
girls.
It's colloquial. We'll allow it.
It's okay. That's true.
As long as you don't intend it in a pejorative way, I right. think it's okay.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Well, from Eagle, we drove west toward
the most
Oregon.
Beautiful drive day.
Yeah, you know,
we were in the frickin' boonies.
Once you leave the Boise area in Idaho, there's not a lot west of there, and then you enter Oregon and there's a whole lot less
yeah.
there because we drove through some just really remote, desolate areas. It was a gorgeous drive, and it
yeah.
was a lot of it was new road for us,
yes,
which is highly difficult to achieve in the lives of two people who've driven pretty much every road there is to drive in the United States.
Seriously, yeah. But you know, it was one medium obscure destination to a another medium obscure destination, you know, it was great.
Through a not very well-traveled route. And so we ended up in Bend,
yep.
Oregon, during that drive. And what a beautiful place.
Yeah.
I hadn't been there since I was a kid. When I was like in elementary school at some point, my family took an Oregon vacation. And I
yeah.
remembered that we went to Sun River, Oregon. I remember having the t-shirt that I wore at school and felt very proud of that when I was like back in, you know, wearing my t-shirt from out of state in elementary school when we got back from summer vacation.
Yeah. I remember being having a t-shirt from somewhere where you don't live years old.
Yeah. Totally. Totally. And so I
still kind of feel like that, frankly.
Oh, do you really?
Oh, yeah. I've got my Outsider's House t-shirt from mm-hmm. Tulsa, Oklahoma. I've been wearing that proudly on tour.
That's true.
Shout out to our friend Danny Boy.
That's so true.
Yep.
So, yeah, you know, Bend is beautiful. And it was a really unique situation that brought us to Bend. One unlike any that we've really ever had. On our touring career, someone who had our host Lauren saw us perform at a house concert in Gresham, Oregon earlier this summer.
Thea's. Hi, Thea.
Hi. And when we extended the dates for our late summer and fall dates, she wrote with a really interesting idea. She's like, you know, I don't think that I can, that I've got the ability to get, you know, your minimum 30 people to come to a concert, but I have a different idea. What do you think about this instead? And what she suggested is that she wanted to invite 12 of her closest girlfriends mm-hmm. to her vacation home, her family vacation home in Bend, for a whole weekend getaway, of which the concert Saturday night was going to be sort of a centerpiece
yeah.
of the night. And so she sponsored the show and then had her friends, you know, chip in for that sponsored show rate so we could do this performance for a smaller, more intimate group of people. And it was freaking magical.
It was really, really, really cool.
First of all, you were the only guy.
Yep.
How'd that feel?
Oh, it was great. Very, very comfortable for me. I think I've talked about this in previous episodes of the podcast, but like, I have surrounded myself largely with women in my adult life, like from age 18 onwards. I have sought out the company of women. I've lived with only women since I had a male roommate my freshman year of college, no roommate my sophomore year. I had one, but then he wasn't able to come back to school, so I just had the room to myself.
Lucky.
And then junior and senior year, I lived with 3 and 5 women respectively in those years, and have only lived with female roommates for the entirety of the time since then. And I just feel super comfortable in a female environment. And I feel very comfortable being the only guy in a female environment. It's a role I know well and can be very comfortable in.
Awesome.
And so it's great for me. I love it.
You currently have sparkly toes. So, you know, like, you fit right in.
We got pedicures on a day off last week. And I didn't get a color. I just had him put the sparkle stuff on.
Yeah.
It's real discreet. Like, from certain angles, you can't even tell. I forget. And then I'll catch him in the morning like, what the...
Hi there, Sparkle Toes. So this episode is turning out to be a whole lot of women. I love it.
Yep.
I love the women energy here.
Yeah.
But this women energy at this cabin in Bend, it was a beautiful, beautiful night. We were up in the mountains. We were at elevation, like 3,000 some feet.
Yeah.
And, you know, because these women had gathered together with the intentionality of spending time together and then sort of having those Saturday night centerpiece of their gathering be this concert, and we were up in the mountains, it kind of felt in a way like camp, you know? Like
it did.
Like getting away to
and
a
also
special
her,
place.
Her house kind of backs up just to, it's not a nature preserve exactly, but it's just like there's a wetland area that kind of just goes through the land
there. And the Deschutes River.
Yeah. And so it had that we're out in the boonies at camp feel really accentuated because, like, you go out to our back patio and it's just like reeds and deer runs and trees and not a lot of other houses. And it was very cool in that way.
You know, when you get away to a place like that, like, you know, whether it's for a vacation or a weekend getaway or when you were a kid and you went to camp, mm-hmm. you know, there is something about being in nature and being out in a place where, when you look up at night, you see the stars, you know, like it just makes you feel, I don't know, it makes me feel a little bit more able to be in touch with things outside of my everyday concerns.
Yes.
You know, and to be in that environment with those women doing that, it was just really special. We got to talk with a bunch. We stayed forever and talked and had so many conversations
it's
afterward.
Really true, yeah.
With people, and one of the women said to me, one of the first conversations I had with somebody afterward, actually, she said, "You know, a lot of us here, it turns out a lot of us are sort of in a transitional place in our lives for one reason or other." And she shared with me what that meant for her. Mm-hmm. And then in the subsequent conversations I had with a number more of them, it was so true. And then, like, people are going through big stuff, you know, from major career changes to going through divorces to, you know, pondering a significant move to a new location.
Yeah.
Just major life stuff, you know, stuff that's not... That you know, getting away to contemplate would probably be a really good idea.
Yeah.
You know, and
to get some like literal perspective on your life. Like getting away affords you perspective on your life.
Yeah,
right?
totally. Yeah. And so, just you know, that this group of people, I don't even know if they knew that everybody, that so many of them in this group were going through so many changes and transitions right now, or if it just ended up being that way, or maybe that's something that the odds are of you know, this age group of women is maybe that's something that happens more frequently, you know, during that phase of life.
Yeah,
potentially.
Maybe.
Who knows? I'm not even sure if that was intentional or not, but here they were at camp processing their transitions, and we got to be a part of that, and that was really special.
Yeah.
That was really, really special.
Yeah, and for her to use your songs and the show you have created and this thing that we do energetically in a group of people mm-hmm. as a focal point for that was a real honor for me.
Absolutely.
You know
me
what
too.
I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you could tell that she knew that that's the energy that, like, because we bring energy, and she knew that she was going to be bringing energy too, and that she thought that those energies would be a good fit for one another.
Right.
Was A, spot on, and B, super cool.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lauren.
Yeah, it was a really special night.
Yeah, it was.
The following day, we drove some more new road.
Yes.
As we went from Bend, Oregon to Newburgh, Oregon.
Over a mountain pass.
Over the Cascades. It was gorgeous.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Just beautiful. Mm-hmm. And we ended up at the new Big Blue House, occupied by our dear friends, Darlene and Lennox. And I should say, it's not a new house. The house was from like 1906.
Yeah.
But it's new to them.
New to them.
In the last year. Darlene is somebody that I met way back in 2010.
Yeah.
When I was on a tour with two other songwriters and a drummer. that we had hired. We called ourselves the Band of Songwriters.
Uh-huh.
We learned each other's songs and played backup for each other.
Big shout out to Aaron Beaumont, JT Spangler, and Nick Bearden.
That's right.
Yep.
And we went out on this tour around the Western U.S., and that's when I first met Darlene. We played, it was actually probably maybe one of the first house concerts I've ever played with the Band of Songwriters back in 2010. That's where I met Darlene. And she invited us all to stay at her house that night, which was great. The guys took over her kids' bedrooms where there were bunk beds. And that meant that the only spot left for me to sleep in was right next to Darlene in her bed.
Ah!
So the very first day that I met Darlene, we shared a bed together.
I love it.
And that sounds very racy, but it was not at all.
No.
But we've been dear friends ever since then. Like, you share a bed with somebody, you got to remain friends. That's just the rule.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So we've been dear friends since then. And a few years ago, she married her sweetheart, Lennox, who is just an amazing soul.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
And they have been working toward dreams in their lives, toward goals that they've got as individuals and as a couple.
Yeah.
And this big blue house where they moved into a year ago is a manifestation of so much of the bounty that they have been just welcoming into their lives. And it was so wonderful to be there and celebrate that with them in their new home.
So wonderful. It's just amazing. I mean, because we have known Darlene through a bunch of different versions of her life.
Yeah.
Darlene, first
single
of all,
mom.
And she's an incredible nurturer. She's like the very definition of what it is to be a nurturing human being. She has raised her own kids. She has also raised a bunch of her niece's kids just out of a need that arose in everyone's life. She is just a wonderful person, a wonderful mom, just caring soul. And, you know, she has always centered other people in that way. And so for her now to be at a place where they don't have any kids currently living with them, right? Like,
right.
Everyone's kind of out of the house, and she and Lennox get to explore, like, what are our dreams
right.
as a couple, and what do we want for ourselves?
Right.
And they really wanted a space where that felt like a sanctuary for them, to have a space for Lennox to do music, like a real intentional space, not like the corner of a bedroom somewhere, but like, here's your music space.
Yeah.
And we relate to that.
Yeah.
Because you know, we're those people too.
Yeah.
And a space for her to do the stuff that she likes to do. And then also space for guests and space for family, and just for it to be a sanctuary for not just them, but for anyone who wants to be able to come and just spend time with
mm-hmm.
them and just decompress, you know,
mm.
which is just such an amazing thing. And it's this beautiful house from like the early 1900s with this amazing woodwork and these really high ceilings in that very classic Western American architecture kind of way. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. And it's just... it's spacious, but not too big. It's big, but still comfy.
It's all great. Yeah.
And it's wonderful.
She shared with us that she's been wanting to host one of our house concerts for years, and that this is finally the year that she got to start doing that. And they told us, see you next year. Like, I think they're going to be on our schedule again next summer, which I'm so excited about.
I think it's already in pen.
I think it's already an annual tradition.
Also, their living room sounds really good.
Yeah, it does. It's true.
Like old plaster and lath. Oh my gosh. Does good things for sound people.
Can I tell you my favorite moment of the whole... Well, I have several favorite moments.
You may.
But one of my favorite moments of the whole night was when Lennox got up at the end of the concert to sort of give sort of the closing remarks
mm-hmm.
at the end of the show. And I end the show with a song called Infinite Lines, which mm-hmm. is on the new record. And I introduced this song as being my love song to possibility.
Yeah.
And he got up and he remarked about that. And he's like, you know, I heard you say before you played that last song that this is your love song to possibility. And it was so fitting because over the course of this evening, I fell in love with possibility.
Aww.
And that is just the most rewarding thing that I could have possibly heard from any human. Like, seriously, that's what, you know, when I write a record, mm-hmm. I write about the stuff that I am personally wrestling with.
Yeah.
Or needing in my life,
right.
You know, like this record came directly out of my own experience of, you know, understanding that there's a lot of really dark stuff happening in the world and in our lives all the time, but that I need I needed to be able to focus my eyes on what's possible and put my energy toward that, and find others who want to do the same thing so that we can propel each other forward toward a better place than where we are right now. You know, yeah. That's what I've needed.
Yeah.
And you know, if I could have, I didn't really articulate this so much as before we set out for the tour, but if I could go back in time, I would articulate my goals for this tour for this tour as being, I want a whole bunch of people to fall in love with possibility. You know, like, and he summed it up for me in a way that I didn't even realize. That's what I hope, because it's what I've needed in my life. And I realize over the course of, you know, sharing these songs with people, that what I also need is other people on that journey falling in love with that idea and banding together to move forward.
I agree with that completely. I mean, because there has been this pervasive subtext for us as a society over the past couple of years, and that's dread.
Yeah.
And foreboding and lack of certainty and worry about the future.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that for you and for me, part of what we really were very conscious about as we were working on designing this record, you know, and this tour and this whole experience was the idea that we really needed to center positivity and to center joy.
Yeah.
And to really explicitly not have there be heaviness or darkness, but really have it be a celebration.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Well, because you know what? We have a lot to celebrate.
Yep.
We really do.
Well, that's it.
We have a lot to celebrate, and we have a lot of really great ideas to make our lives in this world better than they currently are. And we're not going to ever achieve them if we wallow.
Yeah. That we doesn't mean you and me. It means like the world in general.
That's what
there
I mean.
There are ideas in the world that are good and that we can act on.
Yes.
Yeah. And we need really to be focusing on that. You know, it's really easy to feel divided and focus on the negative. And I think it's sometimes really hard to feel like there is that sense of possibility and that there is something positive that we can all focus on as a body politic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that was really fun. It was a great night. Can't wait to go back next year.
Same.
Also, they fed us some yummy food and they have the cutest kitty ever.
Yes. Oh, it's so true. So true. And I want to give a shout out to Misfit Star Scott's daughter, Abby, who showed up.
That's right.
Yeah. She lives in the area. Came by.
That was so fun.
Oh, it was great.
Good for the shout out.
Wonderful human being.
So we're going to take a quick break. We are going to come back after the break. And we're going to tell you about the concert experience that we had yesterday.
Yeah.
The final concert in this last week's run of shows, which was a really unique and profound experience for us both.
Revelatory even.
Yeah. So stay tuned after the break for that. We'll see you soon.
See you in a sec.
Still on I-5.
Yep. We're driving. Could you tell?
We're driving through the state of Washington, barreling toward Tacoma, where we live.
Where
tonight
we'll
be sleeping in our own bed.
Ugh.
Hallelujah.
Just for one night to start, but I don't want to like rush into things.
No, you know, you got to ease back in.
Yeah.
Ease back in. But yes, we're back. We are here in the second part of today's episode to talk about the show that we did yesterday. Which a little bit of background.
Yep. A little bit of backstory. A
couple of different parts of the backstory. I will take the first part of the backstory, which is how this show came to be.
Sure, go for it.
In the first place. So every spring we make a new record, which we bring out on tour with us in the summer and the fall. And each spring we also do an album fundraiser to raise the funds to make that record.
Like a Kickstarter kind of.
Yeah. And we have a community of people all over the country, the world, that participate. And, you know, people choose the level at which they want to participate. One of the levels that we've had for the last couple of years, which has become one of my absolute favorite levels
of
support.
It's just the best.
Is a level called the Gift of Music, in which somebody who contributes $750, that's what the price tag was this past year.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone who contributes $750 for this Gift of Music package, we will, in their honor, gift a concert to a group of people who would not normally be able to be part of the kind of concert experiences that we give to folks around the world. So, yeah. Or around the country. So, like, the idea is, you know, we would do it for, like, a, you know, last year we did it for a group home of somebody who lives in a group home. And actually, we ended up doing it for a group of group homes. So it was, you know, clients, people with varying physical disabilities who are the clients in the group homes, and their caregivers and their families all came, and we got to do a concert for them, and it was so special.
It was amazing. There were physical and emotional and mental disabilities all kind of represented.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just this magical day.
So, you know, the intention is to give it to, you know, a group of people like that. So this year...
For whom a donation-based concert would just not be a thing.
Exactly. So this year, we have a member of our community from Canada, Wendy May, who gave us the gift of music contribution this year. And she asked us to choose the group that we would be giving this concert to.
Yeah.
And so that's great for us because we can kind of keep our ears to the ground about, like, where might, you know, this work in with our schedule? Who might, you know, who can we give this to?
Yeah.
And earlier in the summer, we ended up at a house concert at our friend Shantae's house. She's been hosting us as a host for a number of years now.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to talking with Shantae about this new job that she'd had for the previous few months.
Yep, just got it.
And in talking to her about her job, we realized, oh man, this could be a really cool place to give a gift of music concert. So do you want to share Shantae's part of it?
Like what? Yeah. Shantae has, as of a few months ago, been the program director for a place called HOST, H-O-S-T. And what it is a transitional youth shelter. It's a transitional shelter / services facility for unhoused youth. So, you know, youth, like when I was a kid, we would call them homeless. But I've learned that a better term is unhoused, which really kind of makes sense because it's like, just because you don't have an indoors place to stay doesn't mean that you don't have a home. Like, these people's home is Salem, Oregon.
Right.
It's just they don't have a house to live in their home of Salem, Oregon. Right. Mm-hmm. So they're unhoused. And specifically, it's youth aged 18 to 25. And it's just an amazing, amazing place. There's a number of different things they have going on. They have a 12-bed, like, mini dormitory where people can stay after a trial period of 1 month for up to a year. As they sort of transition into kind of being more integrated into sort of normative society, you know, like where you would have a job and a place to live on your own and you know, just all that kind of stuff.
So a place where they've got a roof over their head, a secure place to sleep every night,
yep.
while they're also accessing services from this center to, if they need to work on getting their GED completed, they
yep.
do that. Or job training for, you know, figuring out what kind of a job they want to apply for.
Yeah.
Figuring out where their next housing, you know, might be and, like, how to, you know, save up money for first month's deposit on a new
budgetary
place to live.
Skills, like all the life skills that, like, if you don't have a stable parenting situation in your teenage years, you don't get taught.
Right.
And, you know, so many of us just take that for granted, right? Like, we just get mentored by our parents, you know, in all the stuff we need to know. Like, just the simple stuff. Like, if you get paid twice a month, how do you not blow your paycheck on video games and a TV and then not have money for food for a week and a half, you know?
Right. Well,
just, like, this stuff that, you know, to those of us who got taught seems like common sense, but for someone who has never been taught, this, like, seems very abstract, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, or been modeled behavior that, you know, that you can learn from that way too.
Yeah.
So there's this shelter aspect of it, but they also have a walk-in center and they get, you know, dozens of people a day come in for, they can make appointments to take a shower, do their laundry. They get food, a meal, a hot meal.
Yep. There's counseling so that people can, like, talk with them about where they're at and what they need and see if there's any, like, other services they can loop them into.
Yeah. Yeah. We met one woman who's been working there for 17 years.
So cool.
One of the staff people. And
hi, Sally.
She mentioned to us that she, every once in a while, someone who was her client, you know, years and years and years ago will pop in because it's been in the same location for 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
An old client will pop in and say hi. And these are people who are now living successful lives. They've got families. They've got, you know, they're doing well, and they, you know, credit the time in this transitional place for having given them the leg up to form those successful lives, you know.
Yeah. It's
which is
such
pretty neat.
A big deal.
Yeah. So yesterday, we saw Shantae earlier this summer, and we learned about what she was doing at the center. We're like, well, maybe this would, and we asked her, would a concert experience like this, do you think, be beneficial to / you know, received by the population of people that you serve? And she jumped on it. She's like, yes, absolutely. We would love this, right? Mm-hmm. And
we asked her after she had hosted the show, like, that evening. So mm-hmm. she had seen the show.
Yeah,
and she,
yeah. Exactly. And so we've been planning this with her for months. And we showed up. And so I have to say, before we arrived, you know, not knowing just from, you know, having heard what the center is all about, I thought I knew what happens there, yeah. You know? And I think I started to think to myself, oh gosh, is this, you know, is what I have to offer really going to be applicable to
like
these
relevant,
people or
yeah.
relevant
Seriously.
In any way? You know, I started to really question and doubt myself. And I realized, you know, in some of those self-doubt moments that like, that is something that happens when we enter into something that's unknown, previously an unknown situations.
Easy for you to say.
Clearly not easy. But when we're entering a previously unknown type of situation,
sure,
that's for me like when that vulnerability feeling kind of kicks in and
sure.
the unknown and like, well, maybe is what I have to offer going to be, you know?
Yeah.
And I started to think, well, should I maybe like do a truncated version of the show? Should I, you know, I wasn't sure. Maybe I should scale it back. Maybe I should
It's really
hold
touching
back.
You. It's really touching you all. Like anytime Shannon's in a situation where she's feeling a little insecure, her first instinct is maybe I should cut the show.
Well,
it's very sweet.
I don't know.
The answer is never cut the show.
I don't know if the description is sweet. That's not sweet. It's just, it's my self-doubt. And there's nothing sweet about that, you know?
Yes, like, I suppose that's true.
It is
a humility about it that's touching to me.
Okay. Well, that I appreciate that. But, you know, I realized as we were approaching the actual concert, like, okay, you know, I'm not sure how this is going to be, you know? And they had set out, like, you know, 20 or so chairs. And by the time concert time started, you know, there were probably 6 clients and maybe 4 or 5 staff people who hung out
yeah.
for the show. So it was just a really intimate group.
Yeah. And there were more kids apparently sitting on the patio.
Outside, listening.
Who didn't feel comfortable being inside mm-hmm. in that structured of an environment with that mm-hmm. many people. Which, again, like 10 people.
Right.
In a space that could hold 40, you know what I mean?
Right.
But I get it, you know, like if an environment feels overwhelming, it can
oh,
feel
yeah.
overwhelming.
Absolutely.
That's
and
fine.
You know, we spent some time before the concert time getting to know students. They showed up at 3:30, roughly, mm-hmm. and we had about half an hour to kind of like hang
Not
out.
Not students,
talk.
Exactly. Clients?
I said students. I meant to
yeah.
say clients because they're, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Sorry.
They're student-aged,
they're youthful
but they're
people.
Not, yeah.
yeah, totally. So we hung out, got to know them. Most of them introduced themselves to us
yeah.
with their street names.
Yes.
Which I took me off guard. I've not had experience living on the street. So that was like something I had to process in real time. Like, okay.
Like, why does everyone have a fanciful nickname? Oh.
Oh, yeah. Like, it makes sense that, you know, if you're living in a vulnerable type situation that you would protect yourself a little bit with a
protect
a
your
name.
Privacy however you can.
Yeah.
Absolutely true.
So, and they were all very, the people who interacted with us were very friendly and, you know, being jokesters with each other and a little bit with us. But, you know, they were warm. They were welcoming.
Yeah.
And then we sat down to do showtime. And I start performing and the room went quiet. Like, just pin drop.
Yeah.
Quiet. And somewhere in there, I made the decision to just give 110% of what I am able to give, you know, and
yeah.
not hold back in any of the ways that my self-doubt was telling me to.
Yeah.
And again, you know, like that self-doubt thing can creep up anywhere at any time. So
sure.
like it's not like it only happens in situations like this. It can happen in someone's living room, and it does.
Yeah.
And I often have to make the choice, like a conscious choice. Okay, Shannon, you're here to give of yourself and what you've prepared. Now sit down and do it. and don't hold back, you know? And so somewhere in there we did that. And, dang, these people really received us
in
a really open-hearted way.
Yeah.
I think that there was part of me, you know, especially as we were talking before the show about like asking them what kind of music they like to listen to. And I'm like, what are they going to think about a middle-aged woman sitting behind the piano singing songs about feelings?
Yeah.
You know, how are they going to receive this?
And it's so interesting because I had that same sort of wonder too, like, you know, beforehand, like, how is this going to relate? I figured it would in some way, but I wasn't quite sure how. But like, as I was listening to you perform the show in real time and doing my thing to it also, you know, but like listening to the words as they came out of your mouth in real time.
Whole different context.
Oh, yeah. Just like sitting in that room with those kids, it was like, oh my gosh, this feels so relevant.
Yeah.
So much of it felt, I mean, like specifically relevant. Like I was, because I'm super empathetic. I always, when I'm in a group of people doing what I do for the show, which is I shape the sound and I shape the experience, therefore, that people are having in the room. And I can really shade it in a bunch of different ways. If you're me, you can shape a sonic experience in a number of different ways. And
you're an audio manipulator.
I'm an audio manipulator. And so, you know, I have to be really, really empathetic. And so a skill that I've developed around this is really to be so intentional about reaching out with my little antennae and feeling what is the energy in the room moment to moment. What do people need? Where are people at? How can I better connect Shannon's experience with the experience that they're having in this moment?
Yeah.
You know? And what I was picking up on, I was just imagining, I was trying to put myself in their shoes. That's what I always try to do in a crowd, like put myself in the shoes of the crowd and like, who are these people and what do they need and how can I best help them with that, you know? And there seemed just in that moment to me to be so many things that you were saying that I thought this was a show about, you know, optimism. Or maybe in a metaphorical way, this is a show about ideas from, you know, the New Deal or something like that, if you want to take a metaphorical layer there.
Mm-hmm.
But this so much of the show is like, this is a show about how you overcome homelessness, you know? Like, so much of what you're singing just felt like it was specifically in that moment applicable in that way, which is very interesting to me.
Yeah, I found myself, you know, when I was talking, there's a song on the new record called Crushed, which is a song that I wrote based on just notes I jotted down on my phone when I was having a nasty internal battle with a feeling of scarcity.
Yep.
And I introduced that song by talking about that moment and what it feels like for me when I'm dealing with scarcity, with a feeling of scarcity. And as I'm sharing that story, I'm like, I have never experienced scarcity in a real way.
Right.
Like these people in this room have experienced scarcity in their lives.
Yes.
You know, they are currently living in a dorm, you know.
Or on the street.
Yeah. Like they have come from the street. Even if they're living in the dorm, they have lived on the street. And that certainly has not been part of my experience. And, you know, to be singing those words or saying those words with that lens in front of my face was just, I don't know, it was pretty profound. And, you know,
it's like a real put your money where your mouth is kind of moment, you know? Like,
really,
you want to sing about scarcity in front of these kids? Well, you better freaking put your heart into
it. You better, yeah, exactly, you know?
You cannot bullshit scarcity to a room full of homeless youth.
Right, right. And so, you know, and there was a part of me that actually was feeling right before that moment, like, what right do I have to talk about this issue in front of this group of people?
Mm.
You know, there was a part of me that in real time was having this debate within myself. And then it occurred to me as I was performing it. So the song Crushed, in this show, we transitioned from Crushed into a song from a few records ago called Slowly Break.
Yeah.
Which is ultimately a song about the first, you know, bulk of the song is about the idea that our hearts break slowly over time via just the, you know, life pounding us over and over, hopes being dashed over and over, going about, you know, doing the routine and not finding joy in it anymore, that's how hearts slowly break. But then
unhealthy behavior patterns and attachments.
Exactly.
You touch on that too.
Yes.
Yeah. And the very way that life can grind you down.
Yeah. The very end of the song, it transforms into this moment of, but then I remember that I have everything I need within me and I can take a breath and let it go.
It's a redemptive moment.
It's a redemptive moment. So at that moment in that song, I every single night on tour, I make an intentional act of trying to make eye contact with as many audience members as will do that with me.
Yeah, you look over every single person in the space.
As I'm delivering that last redemptive moment of that song, right?
Yeah.
And having gone through this whole thing and like, you know, do I have the right to talk about scarcity with this group of people? And okay, I'm doing it, I'm giving it all, here we go, pouring it all out. I get to that last verse of that song, of that set. Mm-hmm. And I start looking around the room. It's the first time I've made eye contact with these folks, you know, for the span of whole songs, right?
Yeah.
And as I'm going from face to face, every single one of them was looking intently back at me.
Yeah.
With an overwhelming amount of openness, mm-hmm, to what it was that I was offering to them.
Yeah.
Not a stitch of defensiveness.
Yeah.
Or callousness.
Or like street-hardened, like emotional armor.
And it was all I could do to just not burst into tears at that moment.
Yeah.
Because I saw before me these faces of people who they have every reason to not trust the world.
Yeah.
To not trust the people that cross their paths because...
Especially adults.
Yeah.
We're the age of the parents who rejected them.
Yeah, and we should talk about that because we learned over the course of the day a lot of sort of some of the backstories of some of these young people.
Yeah. So I was kind of shocked. Like almost everybody we met, their story was that, and it was the same story just with a bunch of different shapes taken.
Yeah.
That they, to a person, everyone but one that I talked with about this was gay or bi or trans and had been kicked out of their home, typically in a violent and abrupt fashion, by a parent who wouldn't accept them when they realized what their kid was.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, some of these stories were shocking. This one kid was sharing with me how when he came out as bi to his parents, his dad went and got a 12-gauge, cocked it, put it in his face, and said, "You get out of my house right now or I'm blowing your head off."
Oh my God.
Right? And like, I mean, not like you've got 30 minutes, pack a bag, like from there to the street in 15 seconds, and that's it, and now you're homeless, right? There was this other kid who was showing me, this little slight guy, showing me he had multiple bullet wounds healed up and multiple stab wounds, including one in his chest, a stab wound that just barely missed his heart, which is why he thinks now he has some heart problems. Not that he's received a bunch of adequate healthcare, but that's his like self-assessment, right? And it was the same kind of thing. I mean, and he was on the street after coming out as bi to his family and got taken in by an older person to him, you know, someone I think in their 30s. Who started injecting him with heroin while he was asleep.
Oh, my God.
He eventually found out in an effort to get him addicted to make him more pliable.
Oh.
Apparently just, like, super manipulative in really deviant sexual ways. Mm. Just insane exploitative behavior.
Right.
We met a young a trans woman who came out to her family as trans and, again, was like, "You get the F out of my house," was driven by her uncle from this rural town outside of Salem where they live to Salem and dropped off at a men's shelter. I mean, I guess they just like found it on like Google or something. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, "Where's a good place for a young trans woman?" It was like, here's a men's shelter.
Right.
So it's just like a bunch of, I mean, the way she characterized it was, it was me. I walked into this room full of a bunch of 50-year-old alcoholic men. Not
right.
Exactly the safest feeling environment for like a, 17-year-old, very tiny, very petite trans woman who's clearly still existing in the male container she was born in,
right.
You know, which is not a safe way to move through the world for most trans people anyway.
Yeah.
You know, moving through the world as a trans person is fraught under the best of circumstances.
Yeah.
And this is like the worst of circumstances.
Yeah. I was really struck. I know that I've heard stories about how a lot of unhoused youth, like how a very large percentage of the unhoused youth population are people who are LGBTQ, who have been rejected by their families, and this is why they are living on the streets.
Yeah.
I think I was not prepared for the personal stories of the vast majority of people we encountered there yesterday. You know, it's really easy for those of us who've not had that experience of being without a home, without a house.
Yeah.
You know, it's really easy to make assumptions about what that population is like. I mentioned to somebody a couple weeks ago that we were going to be doing this concert with, you know, the Center for Unhoused Youth, and describing, you know, what kind of services the center provides for these people. And the comment back from this person I was telling this to was, well, do they have jobs? I'm like, okay, we're just like missing a whole lot of layers here of understanding and compassion.
And the point of that comment was, the subtext was the reason they don't have homes is a lack of personal responsibility.
Exactly. Yeah. Can we just stop with all of that? Like,
this goddamn baby boomer bootstraps idea is going to kill us.
I just, you know, my heart breaks and I want to scream all at the same time. Yeah. You know, for those of us who've not been in that position, you know what? Maybe just let's shut our mouths until we have gained a little bit more understanding about what people have been through and are going through in the world. Because, you know, I try to be that kind of open-minded, open-hearted person and seeking understanding first. And even I was taken aback by the experience that we had yesterday and where these folks have come from in their lives and how they've ended up in this place.
Yeah. I think it's probably easy for us also to caricature populations that we don't know a lot in a hands-on way, like in sympathetic and empathetic ways, also like trying to give them almost, I was going to say too much benefit of the doubt, but that's not what I'm trying. That's not the right way to say it. I'm thinking this through in real time.
Okay.
But like, I kind of in my mind, I think, had imagined that there would be more pathos in the room, that it would be a sad experience somehow, that there would just be this bottomless well of need in every single person. And while absolutely these kids do have so many critical needs, they're also still kids. And like, there was so much joy in that space.
Oh my gosh, so
and
much.
So much youthful energy and creativity and silliness. Yeah. And like that doesn't die in a person just because they're also in an incredibly needy situation in their life. They're still just being a human being in the world. They're still just being the person they are. It's just that they're doing so under so much more of a burden, you know? But it doesn't stop you from being the person you are.
Right. Right. And from being able to be a person who can experience joy and love and connection with other humans. I think that was probably one of the most profound experiences of yesterday for me, was in those moments where I got to share that like intentional eye contact with everybody in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the hugs that every single one of them gave us afterwards when we were leaving. I mean, meaningful, deep hugs.
Yeah.
Not clingy, needy hugs.
No, not at all.
Just like
connective.
What I was not expecting to experience a group of people for whom the world, to whom the, I'm not saying this right, wait.
It's okay.
The world has treated them horribly.
Yeah.
And yet to a person, in each their own way, they had an open heart.
Yeah.
To the world that I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
I saw them each able to receive the love that they deserve. Like they have not yet closed themselves up with an understanding, a misunderstanding that they are somehow not deserving of love.
Yeah, that's right.
They were able to receive it. And can I just say that I've been in living rooms with grown-ass adults on this tour that don't have that kind of openness in their lives.
Oh, sure.
That have closed themselves up. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm not saying we've been through living rooms where like everybody's like that, but we encounter adults all the time.
Absolutely.
Who have had way more advantages than these kids have had in their lives.
Oh, yeah.
And yet have gotten themselves to a place of belief that they don't deserve connection or that they don't deserve love or they're scared to death of it.
Yeah.
And aren't open to it. These kids aren't there. They're ready for love and possibility in their life. And it was freaking inspiring to be there with them.
Yeah, it really was.
Anything else you want to say about yesterday?
Well, actually, yeah, because this is going to air on Wednesday, and this thing that we're doing,
It
might still be going on then.
Cool, yes.
So another feature of this this Transitional Youth Center host is that they have a music room. There's an extra room in the building, in this little building that they're in, that they have dedicated to be the music room. And I mean, it's like, you know, 8x12 with a weird angle bitten off. It's just like the weird odd and end room.
Yeah.
It's their music room, and they have a bunch of donated, like a couple acoustic guitars, an electric guitar, a little amplifier.
A keyboard.
A decent keyboard, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
A little microphone. There's stuff. There's sheet music. There's all this stuff. And there was this, there's this young man in particular right now, and I know that there have been others in the past because this building's been there for a long time.
Several of the people we encountered yesterday are musical in some way.
Yes, that's true.
So there was a number of them there who are musical. They've got beautiful.
Yes.
Trans girl that we met.
Yes.
She plays piano beautifully.
She was trained.
Another young man who was there has a beautiful singing voice.
Yeah.
And there was this one man, young man in particular, who wants to be a music producer. Right?
Yes,
That's what he wants to do.
And he doesn't have anything to produce music on, but he has all these ideas. And he was showing you like a legal pad with pages and pages and pages of handwritten notes, not just of lyrics, but also like separated out into different groupings. Like these ones would be panned. These ones would be in the left side of the headphones. And these ones would be on the right side of the headphones because this one is the voice of the conscious and this one is the voice of the subconscious. And all the music would be right up the center as a way of grounding these two experiences. And he had all these thoughts written down on paper because he has no way of fixing them in any kind of tangible form.
Like they don't have a way to record them.
There's no recording equipment there,
yes.
Right?
And so we got an idea.
So we got this idea because that's what I do, right? I fix things in a tangible recorded medium. The way you do that these days is with a computer. You know, you get a computer and you have some software on it. You know, perhaps it's a Mac with GarageBand, you know, at a sort of most bare bones, but also still really good level.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have that. And we were talking with Shantae, her buddy, the program director, about that. And she says that it's, you know, it's on their list. But I mean, there's a hundred things on their list. You know, like any organization like this, they have more ideas than they have budget.
Yep.
Always. And budget's a constant issue, you know, and they're always working to make ends meet. And, you know, and things like this, like a computer for the music room, never necessarily is in the top five most urgent things, right? And so so we got this idea. I got this idea. Like, well, what if we could leverage the power of our community maybe to buy these kids a music computer, a computer for their music room?
Yes.
You know, get them a used iMac that has GarageBand on it and get them a recording interface. Pardon the honking. Someone almost drove into the side of our car, but I think everything's okay now.
We're okay. We're okay.
Don't text and drive, people.
Stay in your lane.
Roads in Washington can be curvy.
So late last night,
I put out the word on Facebook. Yeah.
That this was a dream we had to try to raise money for a music computer and some gear for them to be able to make recordings.
Yeah, I described the situation and I just made an appeal like, hey, here's a situation, here's something that we feel could really be helpful to them. What do you think? You know,
As of this recording,
it is more than funded for the base level of what it could be.
Yeah.
Which is really, really, really exciting. I had sort of set a provisional, like, bare bones goal is $700. That's enough to buy, like, a used iMac, a pretty decent one, actually. I mean, granted, it's 6 years old, but a six-year-old computer for this kind of thing is fine.
Mm-hmm.
And an interface is what you use to get sounds into the computer. It's an mm-hmm. interface between the real world and the computer world, you know, for sound. And, you know, so we already have that covered. People continue to pitch in. And here's the deal. I want to encourage anyone listening to this podcast right now, if you would like to be a part of helping improve the lives of these unhoused youth in transition through the healing and restorative power of music and the unbelievable pride and sense of self-reliance and satisfaction that you can get from actuating a creative idea of yours into the world and fixing it in a tangible medium. You know, I know from my experience with alcoholism and homelessness that music is one of the things that saved me, that gave me a purpose, that gave me something to get up for when things were the darkest and the worst. Mm-hmm. And I know that it can have that power, and I know that it can have that power for these kids. Mm. We already have enough to do the most bare bones version of this, but, you know, if we can go bigger, great. Like, if we can put more RAM in that computer so it can be more responsive and more engaging to work with, wonderful. If we can get the version with a bigger monitor so they can see more things at the same time and that's easier, great. Mm. If we can put a bigger hard drive in it so more people can store their musical ideas on there, great.
Bottom line is that whatever you, if you decide that you want to contribute to this project with us, all of it will be going to this effort of creating a music studio for these unhoused youth.
That's
at the
right.
Host Center.
Well, I'll be taking collections for this for another few days. This airs on Wednesday. We'll probably wrap it up on Friday. So if you're, you know, if you listen to this and you want to pitch in, do so. You can Venmo me at Hilljam, H-I-L-L-J-A-M. You can Cash App me. My username is $Hilljam, H-I-L-L-J-A-M. You can PayPal me. My email address is hilljam@secretagentaudio.com. If you need to find another way to get money to me, you can Messenger it to me. There's all kinds
on
of
Facebook,
ways.
Yeah.
There's no wrong way to do it. Just let me know that you're sending me money for that, and I'll just put it into the pot, and whatever the pot ends up being by the weekend, we're going to buy these kids a music set up for their music
room.
It's so great.
It's all happening.
It's happening.
And those of you who are listening who have already contributed, thank you so much. It's such a joy to, with you, get to do this with these kids, for these kids. It's pretty awesome.
It's amazing.
So thank you.
Yeah.
And thank you to Shantae for welcoming us to host and to her whole staff. That was just, you were all so remarkably warm, welcoming, and the work that you're doing there is clearly just of such great value.
These are saints among us.
Thank you for what you do, dedicating your lives to doing every day.
Yep.
Thank you to Wendy May, who funded this gift of music and really opened up this whole possibility to all of us.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of overarching thank you to our community. You all just astound me on a regular basis, with how you open your hearts and you open your lives to others, to us, to the people in your community, to folks that you don't know. I am really glad to be walking this planet at the same time as y'all.
Yep, feel very, very, very lucky.
And with that,
good episode.
Perhaps we shall sign off for the day.
Yeah. Hey, I don't want to brag, but we're like 25 miles away from our house.
That's fantastic.
Oh my gosh.
I have bad news for you, but you're going to have to make a pee stop for me before we get there.
I'm honestly shocked you managed to go this far. Really. It's a miracle.
You all, thank you so much for spending the last hour or so with us. It's been just a joy to get to share our experiences with you.
Yeah.
If you have thoughts about any of this stuff, if you are part of our Misfit Stars supporting member group on Facebook, we would love to hear from you.
And if you're not, you could rectify that by going to misfitstars.com/join. It takes like, 45, 60 seconds tops. Mm-hmm. You can sign up. You can become a supporting member. Basically, here's the deal. If you like what we're doing in the world and you would like us to have five of your dollars per month to do a little bit more of it, then this is a way that you can just sort of give us that support on an ongoing basis. So thank you to those of you who decide that you want to do that.
Yes. And listeners, thank you so much for giving us your ears for a little while.
Yeah.
We will be back next week with another episode.
Which we may record in Canada.
It's possible. It could be an international episode. What?
Whoa, Misfit Stars Without Borders.
That's catchy. Yeah. So until then, you all take good care of yourselves and good care of each other. Mm-hmm. And we will see you next week.
Can't wait.
Talk to you then.
Love you guys.
Bye.
Bye.